We talk about that a lot. We talk about, now she's gone. We talk about that a lot in different ways with different programs.
I didn't hear that last bit, Adrian. I'm sorry. She interrupted and I couldn't hear.
Right. But she's gone. That's the end of her annoying interruptions.
Okay, great.
So what I was saying was maybe at the end, maybe in the fourth segment, we could talk a little bit about lifelong learning. We talk about that a lot on the show. You've done something that a lot of the listeners know about, which is the great courses.
Okay, sure.
And they're now on Netflix and all over the place. So anything that you might want to say as an academic yourself, as a lifelong learner yourself, about that, I think would be really interesting, very valuable. Now, happiness, meditation and mindfulness, lifelong learning. Those were three things that came to my mind. But what would you like to talk about?
Those sound all great to me. I'm very delighted to talk about Eastern practices in any sense, because I've been trained in Hinduism and Islam and Buddhism. So any questions you think people might have about that or about religion in general, I'm open to talking about those sorts of things. So I can go anywhere.
Okay, so the two I'm going to add to it, and on the mindfulness, I'm going to add the idea of spirituality, and I'll make an introduction to do with that with aging. Islam, to me, would be super fascinating, only because we're in such a tizzy as to how to regard that religion. We are completely confused. Most people didn't have it in their consciousness at all, and then when they had it in their consciousness, it had to do with terrorism. Boom.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like a boom consciousness. And so we went from nothing to everything in like 30 seconds in the West. And now what? So there's just no perspective. And that's fair that it would have happened historically, that we would have had no perspective. So maybe you can give a little perspective. How does that sound?
Okay, I can do that.
Okay, good. So now let me just tell Stuart that we're ready. When I tell him that, he's going to be testing music. He'll tell us that we have 10 seconds of silence, and then you'll hear my introduction. And we'll start with the first one, which is the happiness one, which brought me here in the first. Okay, hold on. All right, he's testing the music now, and we'll be quiet now.
Okay.
Right.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation... Uh-oh. That fell, and I'm afraid that that's going to be right in our intro. I'm sorry. I apologize, Mark. That
no problem.
Very rare and not a sign of happiness to me at the moment, but okay.
I love that song, though.
Because it's a whole 10 minutes. It's like a whole thing with actors and everything. I have it online on our website. Yep, ahead.
Thank you. When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about what? Well, the Fountain of Truth about aging. And today we have a fun show, an insightful show, an educational show, really, possibly, because of some of our topics, a life-changing show with Professor Emeritus at Rhodes College, Mark W. Busey. And he is not just a professor of religion. He's been, of course, he's taught at Harvard, the University of Southern Maine, Harvard College, Harvard Divinity School, and now at Rhodes. But you'll say, you know, okay, I'm not a scholar. Well, you really are, because he is also one of the lecturers of the great courses. And I know so many of you, from information you give to me, take those courses. The great religions, Hinduism, religions of the Axial Age, Confucius, Buddha, Jesus, and Muhammad, and practicing mindfulness. Yeah, I know, I snuck up on you. We always talk about mindfulness and meditation, but now we're not only speaking with a professor who is involved with this in terms of teaching it, but also living it. So there's a lot to cover. And I want to begin with Professor Busey on the topic of happiness. And the reason for this is I was taking a lecture from him in New York City, and his topic was happiness. And Professor, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Adrienne. It's good to be with you.
Well, let's talk about just that one little topic. It is probably the biggest topics in the world. It's even in our Constitution. Thomas Jefferson thought we should all pursue happiness. It was one of our rights. But you have a very specific definition of happiness and how it's looked at in different cultures. Just illuminate us a little bit on that.
Well, you're right that happiness is a very important topic, both in contemporary culture, but also historically. If you go to Google and just type in happiness, you're going to find lots of references and lots of books about how to find happiness. So I think people today, particularly in the West, are looking for happiness. And that's not surprising, because I think people from the beginning of the human experience have been looking for happiness. If we go back all the way to Aristotle and the Greek traditions, you find that philosophers were talking about happiness as the purpose or endpoint of life. Aristotle once said that happiness is the only thing that we seek for itself, that everything else that we do, we seek for the purpose of happiness. We seek wealth for happiness. We seek fame for happiness. We seek a good family for happiness. We don't seek happiness in order to have wealth, or happiness in order to have a good family, but it's the other way around, and happiness is the thing that we desire most of all. This according to Aristotle, but it's also an idea that's reflected throughout the world. The Dalai Lama himself recently says that happiness is the whole purpose of life, and that all beings desire to be happy. So it has this long history, but the problem is what we mean by the word happiness. And there are so many different connotations that are attached to that word. It's a very curious word, particularly in the Western tradition, because it relates to this word hap, H-A-P, which suggests kind of a randomness or something that's thrown up by fortune, like we would say happenstance or a happening. That's something that's kind of out of our control. And I think for a lot of our history, many people believe that our happiness was something that we could not really control. But that began to change, it particularly changed during the Enlightenment experience that informed the founding of this country. And so you rightly pointed to the idea of the pursuit of happiness, which seems to suggest that happiness is something that we can, first of all, pursue, and secondly, attain, and that it's therefore within our abilities to do that. But probably the real problem is that happiness in the Western tradition in particular is seen more as pleasure, that it's something that gives us a fun experience, a desirable experience, something that makes us glad. But that's not the way the word happiness has been used in certain other cultures, even in the Western culture. So when people like Aristotle talk about happiness, they're not talking simply about this kind of pleasure, but about what we would call flourishing, or a sense of tranquility or equanimity. It's something much richer and much deeper than what we in the West generally mean by the word happiness.
And, you know, that's where there's such a connection. A couple of things on my mind as you speak. One is the connection between aging and happiness. I mean, we are a show that reveals issues of aging, and our culture tells us that as we get older, we should get less happy, because we become more frail, we get closer to death, and all the studies show that's exactly the opposite, that there is a trajectory in middle age where you're pretty miserable. And when you're even in high school and younger, you're even more miserable. And then something begins to happen as you age where you get that, the real happiness that you're talking about, or the more permanent, not the transient feeling of, hey, that was a great movie, and
right,
I enjoyed my meal, but this tranquility, this equanimity seems to come with age, and it only diminishes again at very old age when we really are feeling ill, if we don't die healthy, which a lot of people do today, actually. And they don't even have this diminution of their faculties. But with you, in your studies, you're talking about the pursuit of the more spiritual, the more permanent, the more status happiness.
Yes, that
healing.
Is exactly right. And I'm not surprised to hear about the study that you mentioned, because I've experienced it in my own life. I think my 30s and 40s were really some of the toughest times for me. But as I've gotten older, in spite of the fact that I'm experiencing, you know, problems with health and other kinds of issues, I feel like my life is happier now than it's ever been. Now, part of that's because I would attribute it to the practice of mindfulness, which I've been doing for about 35 years, but also because I think as I've gotten older, I've begun to see that the kinds of things that the culture has told me will make me happy do not, in fact, make me happy, and I have subsequently begun to give those up. So I think most of us live under the illusion that happiness is a matter of acquiring things, that if we get the right person in our life, or if we have the right house, the right car, the right job, or even, you know, very positive kinds of experiences, that those things are going to make us happy. But what I find is that my happiness has really depended more on letting go of things or relinquishing things rather than acquiring things.
And you know what happens there too? We, as we age, we want to actually dissolve some of the things we have. If we could, there's a great commercial. They're selling junk men, basically. They come to your house, they take stuff away. And
oh,
what
really?
And you pay them $800, and they make your stuff disappear. And what the commercial is, and it's so wonderful, is a person, usually a woman, but not always, pointing at things. And as she points at each thing she doesn't want in her life anymore, the junk men take it away and they disappear. And she becomes so powerful, not from acquiring anything, but from getting rid of it. It's a beautiful Western concept of an Eastern idea of no longer having the attachment. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about this, the business of mindfulness, and I really mean it, the business of mindfulness today. Most of the people listening have either, they have a CD on meditation, they have a meditation group, they're doing breathing exercises, they're doing it at the gym, but, you know, we're speaking here with Professor Mark Musey, who is a longtime practitioner, he just said over 30 years himself, in the world of mindfulness. He's been all over the Eastern world as a traveler, as a writer, as a lecturer, and he has a tremendous amount of insight into how you can bring this into your own life. It's more than just reading the book. maybe even throwing away the book. And we'll talk to him. You'll also know that if you go to the Great Courses, you can hear his course on practicing mindfulness. So when we come back, we'll speak more with the professor. Don't forget to go to our website, generationboldradio.com, and you'll be able to ask Adrian. And if there's a question you have for the professor, I will bring it to him. These are the kinds of shows that you've asked me to have on radio. It's the only place in the whole country where you can talk about aging successfully and where we kind of change our own images of
you
aging.
May think that
when we come back, we'll get more people. Don't
that
you go in.
Doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da.
Okay, so that was perfect. Okay,
that was done.
Now they're going to put in a commercial. We don't have to wait for them. And we're going to do another 10 seconds. And we're going to go right to mindfulness. Now, other than the courses, are there any books or anything that you, and I'll say the word right out, that you would like me to promote? I'm very happy to mention them, or send them to a website, whatever you would like.
I've got that book called The Four Wise Men, which is my latest. And be happy if you'd mention that. That'd be great.
Right. And is there a website or they go to Amazon? What should they do?
It's on Amazon. Yeah, all my books are on Amazon. Get it that way.
Okay. Yes, and those four wise men, do they have anything to do with meditation?
They do, yeah. That's something I'd be happy to mention. Yeah, they
okay.
do.
Okay. I think two of them, Jesus and Confucius.
Right, Jesus, Confucius, Buddha, and Muhammad, yeah.
Well,
particularly Buddha,
yeah.
But, you know, all of them have some form of meditation in their teachings.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Stu, we are ready. Okay. And now, according to this, we're not on yet. According to this, you're on sabbatical now?
Well, I'm on sabbatical, but when the sabbatical ends, which will be at the end of this month, then I am completely, fully retired. So,
well, that's why you're so happy.
That's
why you got so happy.
That's exactly right. That's one of the things
right.
I let go.
Career, goodbye, junk point.
Goodbye, yeah, I don't need you anymore.
And the junk guy came and he took it away. Yeah, I can't
exactly.
wait for it. So we're ready. We are. He thinks that we'll never shut up. All right, we're not talking.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, da, da.
Well, he's happy, and he's inappropriate for his age, and maybe that also describes our guest. Our guest is Professor Mark Musi, and he has been with us for just a few minutes, and in those few minutes we have been taken into the world of happiness and what we may want to look for in our own lives to become happier. He's Professor Emeritus at Rhodes College. He's particularly happy because he's on sabbatical and it's a beautiful day. But he has taught at Harvard College, Harvard Divinity School, and he's probably taught you if you've taken any of his courses from the great courses, the great religions, Hinduism, religions of the Axial Age, Confucius, Buddhist, Jesus, Muhammad, and he has a book out. No surprise there. It's called The Four Wise Men, and we're going to talk about them in the context of meditation. If you want to read the professor's book, it's very easy. Do what you always do. Go to Amazon and buy the book. It's called The Four Wise Men. So those are four wise men whose names you know. Professor, tell us about the four wise men and how you kind of transitioned into your own life in the world of meditation and mindfulness and what it means to you.
Okay, I'll start with the four wise men. They are Confucius, Buddha, Jesus, and Muhammad. And I selected these four in part because of their great influence in the human spiritual experience. And I started the work just to reflect on what made them great and why we consider them exemplars for human beings. And And so I did a study, and I first of all made it into one of the great courses. And so I've got 36 lectures on these guys. But then I went ahead and put that down as a book and did some study about the things that they had in common. Well, as you might expect, they didn't have a great deal in common. They all lived at different times and in different places. They all had different worldviews. So I asked myself, what is it that these four share, if anything? And they did share some things. I mean, one of the things that I thought was fascinating was that they all lived during crazy times, kind of like times we're living in, you know, during social and political turmoil. So that told me a lot, that these times often evoke creative thought, particularly among those of us who are more sensitive to the spiritual and philosophical dimensions of life. So that was the first thing. And then another thing, and this is what relates it to mindfulness, is that all four of these wise men took time to be alone. Now, this was especially true in the case of the Buddha. In fact, he was probably one of the individuals that we most associate with meditation, because it's kind of through his teachings that we learn a lot about that, and he spent a lot of time meditating. People might be surprised to know that Confucius and Jesus and Muhammad also spent a great deal of time in solitude. Jesus would pray. Muhammad would pray through the night. So he would perform these vigils. And Confucius, whom Westerners don't know a great deal about, which I think is unfortunate, but he also spent a great deal of time alone just reflecting on his life and trying to become a better person. So this is one of the things that unite all four individuals. Now, that's not to say they all meditated as we might think of that today, you know, sitting down somewhere with their legs folded, but they did take time just to be quiet and to live a life of simplicity where they could develop that sense of solitude. And they also shared one other feature, and that was the idea of compassion, of being concerned about the well-being of themselves and others. So even though they were all very different, lived during different times, had different worldviews and different beliefs, I think we could say that they were all very much concerned with what we today call mindfulness and compassion.
You know, in the world of aging, there's a real tension. And as you're talking to me, I'm feeling personally less and less tense. I'm thinking about four great names in our culture, in our religion, and in our history. And you're talking about them being quiet and the solitude and the things that we strive for, as you said in the first part of the show, equanimity. But as we age, some very strange things are happening. First of all, there is something called gerotranscendence, which is as you get older and older, you kind of leave your attachment to the world and you see things as more universal. And that makes you calmer, the happiness we talked about, great equanimity. Oh, you get more spiritual, maybe not more religious, but more spiritual. You begin to love nature. At the same time, professor, ask anybody how their retirement is, and they're going to tell you that they're busy. They're so busy, they don't know how to stop. Isn't that a funny thing that's going on now? And how can we stay on the path a little bit more of that spirituality, that equanimity, when we're almost driven to say, and not just pretend, but make ourselves busy in this Western culture, even after we say goodbye to our work?
That's very interesting, because now that I'm on sabbatical and sort of moving into the retirement experience, I find myself probably busier than I was when I was working.
Yep.
And
I
think the reason for that is that I'm now doing the things I want to do. And so rather than doing the things I have to do, I'm spending time, for instance, doing some carpentry work, which I actually love a great deal. And my wife is trying to get me not to spend so much time doing that and to kind of calm down a little bit. So I certainly see that as definitely happening. But here's how I'd answer that question about our busyness. I don't think that mindfulness and busyness are necessarily incompatible with one another. As long as we approach our busyness with mindfulness. So mindfulness is not simply something that we do while we are being alone and meditating on a cushion. That may be a practice that many people want to adopt. But the whole goal of that practice is to bring the experience of mindfulness into everything that we do. So it's something that's supposed to pervade our whole life and not simply be an episodic event that we experience for a couple of minutes each day. And I'd say the same thing about solitude. Solitude, even though it's sort of related to the word solo, does not mean that we are necessarily alone. I've certainly had the experience, and I think a lot of people have, of feeling loneliness in the midst of a crowd.
Right.
And you can also practice solitude in the midst of a number of people. It doesn't necessarily that you mean that you are alone or separated or alienated from other people. So that, I think that's an important distinction.
Yeah, that's a wonderful insight, and insightfulness is really what you're all about, Professor. It was a wonderful lecture. When we come back, we're going to talk about a different kind of insight into the small for a moment. Something very different from the show. I think in many levels, very necessary to our happiness. We'll be right back.
I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay. Very, very good. And,
good.
But, you know, boy, do these things fly away. You think you have so much time, and you end up with
I know.
So this is the third one already, and this is you already heard the introduction, so we're going to talk about that. And if we have time, we're going to go a little bit more into the spirituality after that. All right? So
good.
Just hold 1 second. So it's ready.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And I'm aware that some of you will listen to this archived on our website. Others of you will be going to our app, and others are listening live and maybe just tuned in. So I want to give you a little bit of a background of what we're talking about here, because the next part of our show will be very different, a great departure from what we usually discuss. I'm here with Professor Mark Musey. He is Professor Emeritus at Rhodes College. He is also someone whose lectures you may have already taken, because he has several of the great courses. And his courses deal with religion, mindfulness, comparative religion. And I first heard him on the topic of happiness in New York City. It was a live course. But I couldn't help asking him to also comment on the religion of Islam. And I'll explain why and what it has to do with aging. I was actually at a dinner last night with my best friend, such a good friend that we went to our 50th college reunion together. Imagine that. And she said she was afraid for her grandchildren. In the middle of eating the fish and drinking the Prosecco, that's what she said. She has two little grandkids. My grandchild is 11 weeks old. I'm not afraid. But I can see that there's a very, very different attitude, and it does affect the happiness of all of us who may have grown children but are very, very caring for very little ones. And I saw that in the works of Professor Musey, he has studied Islam, he's written about Islam. Mohammed is actually one of the four wise men of his latest book, which you can get on Amazon, and he knows a thing or two. So, Professor, with that introduction, what are we missing here? As I said in the break, most of us never heard of Islam or never thought about Islam, and then all of a sudden we associate it with terror. and there's nothing in between. What's the scoop there?
Well, that's a big topic and an important one. Yes, I think you're absolutely right that most of us, at least in this generation, have not thought much about Islam except in the context of terrorism. But that doesn't mean that the West has not been involved with a relationship with Islam. In fact, from the very beginning, it has. And it's been a contentious relationship many times. But in other times, there's been a spirit of cooperation between Jews and Christians and Muslims that many people might be surprised to hear about. So let me tell you a little bit about the history of this relationship. So from the very beginning, I think Christians and Jews were very suspicious of Muhammad and his teachings because it sounded a lot like what they knew in their own religions. And it's pretty clear, I think, that Muhammad was aware of Judaism and Christianity and tells a lot of the same stories that Jews and Christians tell. And if you read the Quran, you'll find that there are a lot of biblical references, even to Jesus and to Mary and to Moses. And there's a lot in the Quran that people would recognize, but they would see it somewhat differently because Muhammad had a different take on these biblical stories than Jews and Christians do. So almost from the beginning, I think Christians in particular saw Islam as being a competitor. And so part of this was because Christianity was in decline when Islam was in the ascendancy, and there were some political issues involved. And one of the interesting things is that Christians did not know what to do with Muhammad. How was it that this person could be telling these stories about Jesus and Mary and yet not seeing Jesus as being the incarnation of God and what was going on here? And an idea arose in the Middle Ages that was probably well accepted, I think, among Christians in particular, that Muhammad was, in fact, a Christian, that he grew up as a Christian, that he was a Christian official, may have been a bishop, and wanted to become pope. And when he couldn't be pope, he went to Arabia and told his own version of the Christian and Jewish traditions and sort of created his own religion where he could be pope. Now, that idea sort of dominated medieval Christianity for a long time. And so it was part of what fueled this contentiousness between Christians and Muslims. But,
so
you know,
as
Islam began...
Professor, when are we talking about it? You said Middle Ages, but are we talking about 1200? Around what time are we speaking here?
Oh, that's a good question. So Islam begins to emerge in the 7th century.
Right.
And then we're talking about from about the 7th century to, I'd say, the 14th, 15th century, something like that. So
they
it was a long...
They didn't have no competition clauses then, so he couldn't have...
He couldn't sign a no-compete.
So now we've set up a political or, let's say, a more institutional animosity as opposed to a personal animosity, which perhaps
right.
it grew into.
Right. Yeah, exactly right. So what I think one thing that we need to recognize is that Judaism, Christianity, and Islam really probably share a lot more than they differ. They all have differences, of course, in practice and beliefs, but there is so much that they hold in common, particularly when you look at them with respect to something like Hinduism or Buddhism. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And it's also important to remember that there have been lots of times when Jews, Christians, and Muslims have gotten along. I was just in Spain a couple of weeks ago in Andalusia, and this was one of the locations that was very popular with Christians, Jews, and Muslims in terms of their cooperation with one another. So they built a civilization, they shared ideas, they borrowed from one another, and apparently got along very well. This in the late Middle Ages. So it kind of represents at least a model for a different way of thinking about the relationship between Jews, Christians, and Muslims.
You know, I'm going to get so Western on you and so lowbrow. One of my favorite rides is in Disney, in Epcot, and you go through the history of the world. And in the very beginning, you've got cavemen and all this, and then all of a sudden, you have monks and you have Jewish scholars and Islamic scholars all sitting around. Of course, they're all automatons, you know. And they're all learning and studying from scrolls. And
right.
The theme there is, in this kind of babyish, you know, theme park way, how much they work together to create what we would call today modern civilization, mostly from
right.
the spoken and written word, philosophy, and so on, sharing medicine discoveries together. And it does still happen, of course, today. But it's very interesting to note from your books, from your writing, that the almost the other, and we're going to get back to happiness now, of the four wise men is Buddha. Where, and I've had Hindu friends say to me, the Judeo-Christian-Islamic religion, in one word, as if that's one word to them.
Yeah.
Because they don't see the difference. They have a lot of trouble distinguishing. What are you talking about? What's going on
right.
here? They can't see. It's like such a de minimis.
Exactly.
Difference.
They can't see the differences. Yeah.
They can't see the difference. And so,
right.
And so there I go back to that with you as a scholar, as one of the leading scholars in this field. When you look at Buddhism, and you relate it to the ability to be happy, and this is a loaded question. I'll tell you that right now. Is it easier or more likely that you'll be happy if you take on Eastern thinking than Western thinking?
Oh, goodness gracious. That is a tough question to answer. I would think it would depend a lot on how you take it on. Now, certainly, you know, a lot of people in the West, particularly in the Christian tradition, kind of take on their religion or their spirituality in kind of a nominal way. Kind of what Dietrich Bonhoeffer called the cheap grace approach. That is, they're expecting Jesus to save them and that their happiness will come at the end of this life when they go to heaven. And so that helps them kind of endure what might be a miserable life, might be a happy life. But their true happiness comes at the end of life, in fact, during their death, so when they go to heaven. But Buddhism believes you can be happy now, and you don't have to wait to the end of your life. And the story of the Buddha is about an individual who found permanent happiness, not just this episodic happiness, not just the gladness that we experience ever
you
now and then.
We're going to take a little bit of a break. We knew this was going to happen going into our fourth segment. There's going to be some surprise. Don't you go away.
I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay, unbelievable last segment. Okay? Stu, could you refresh my memory? Yeah, how long is this last segment? Because I want to know. Okay, so what I want to do is take that step from what you just said about being happy here.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about. I'll tell you now, but you'll hear it a little differently on the air. Many baby boomers believe that they invented meditation because they let it in. Yeah, that's true. Because they let it into the United States during what they used to call New Age, when we were
right.
all, you know, smoking and hippie-ish, and we would
right,
listen
right,
to Ravi
right.
Shankar, and you know, and
right.
transcendental meditation, all that stuff. So.
Yeah.
And our parents said it's a fad, but it's not a fad. It's really it's on every street corner. You can pay $5 and go into a meditation room.
right.
So are we doing it the way it would have been considered effective in the East today, or
yeah.
in, in the East, in what Buddha is saying? I mean, how have we put a spin on it? And if is our spin something that can lead to happiness, or just more appointments in the book to go to the meditation room? So that's kind of what I'm going to be asking you. In addition to
okay,
that,
that's a great
I just
question.
Want to make sure, yeah, I just want to make sure that we've covered what you want to cover. Is there anything else that you want to make sure we discuss?
No, that's a great thing. I think that'll give us a lot of time. Yeah.
Okay.
So that'll be fine.
Yeah.
Think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit, I'm inappropriate for my age, da 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 da.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. If people ask me, why do I do this radio show? This is why I do this radio show. I absolutely love speaking to people who are experts in their field, like Professor Mark Musey. In his case, it is comparative religion, Eastern religion, meditation. And he's made quite a difference. One of the things that we will ask him about a little later in the end is this creation of the Compassionate Campus Initiative at Rhodes College. I don't want to leave our little time together, Professor, without saying a word about that.
Okay.
But where we left off a few moments ago was that we are trying to stay with this happiness on earth, as the Buddha would say, not waiting
mm-hmm.
for another world. Wouldn't be bad if it was there too. That's okay too. But let's have both if we can. And I made you laugh by saying that a lot of baby boomers, and those are the people listening to the show, think they invented meditation. Why? Because they took a pilgrimage to Kathmandu when they were 18, and they wore tie-dye clothes, and they did transcendental meditation. And their parents, who are now in their 90s, said it's a fad. But it's not a fad. There's a lot of meditation groups, books, even in your gym. I don't think there's a gym in this country now that doesn't have a meditation class, we'll say. Now, are we doing it the way that it could work to bring us happiness? Are we doing it very so differently from the Eastern culture that it's just another, you know, phony baloney way of selling yoga mats? Or is there something here that's going to stick? That's what I would like
okay,
to know.
Okay, that's
in
a very
opinion.
Good question. And so let me first of all address the idea that the boomers invented meditation. That's not true. It's been part of the human experience for at least 4,000 years. I mean, we have evidence, physical evidence, that people were meditating 4,000 years ago. There are images that were found that show people in this meditative posture. So it's been around for a long time. In different forms, of course, so it's kind of hard, I think, for us to say that the way it's practiced today was exactly the way that the Buddha practiced it. But I think, you know, in the main, sitting still, watching the breath, paying attention, these are the sorts of things that the Buddha and other of the ancient meditators taught. So to that degree, I think we're doing it the right way. But here's the thing that I have with the way meditation has sort of begun to develop in, the last decade, maybe the last two decades, is that it has been medicalized and psychologized and individualized. And it has been abstracted from its richer context. So when the Buddha taught meditation, he taught it as one of eight kinds of practices. He called it the Eightfold Path. He said there's a way to happiness or nirvana, and you get there by following this Eightfold Path. Well, meditation is just one aspect of that. And what's happening today is that when you go to a gym or go take a meditation course, they're leaving out the other seven elements that include things like proper speech, or proper action, things that we would consider ethics, basically, a concern with other people. And so what we're trying to do, I think, is to teach meditation as just an individual way of relaxation. So that's what I mean when I say we've medicalized it or make it stress reduction. And that's kind of psychologizing it, making it a way for us just to get along in a stressful world that we live in. Now, that's great. I mean, that's a good thing to do. It is a stressful world, and we do need to kind of abstract ourselves from that. But the Buddha and all those other wise individuals from the ancient world taught us that we have to be concerned about the other person, and we have to watch what we say, and we have to attend to how we live our lives. And it's much more than simply sitting down on a cushion and trying to get calm. That's important, to be sure, but it's not the only thing.
You know, this is very instructive. I think we're all looking for something more to do to improve. That is a very Western thing, and it's certainly not a calming thing. It's not a meditative thing. But I did forget about the other six. I mean, I was an Oriental, they called it in Brooklyn, Oriental philosophy major. That's what they called it then. And that was in political science minor. And the fact is that and they included Greece in the Orient, which maybe, you know, they could have had a map, but who am I to say? However, the fact was that there were the other six, and they are ethical, and they are compassion, and they are right speech, and they are right action. And the trouble is that those are very hard things to do. They're much harder than sitting by yourself.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Very odd stuff. And I would wager that a lot of those things are the things that overlap in Islam and Judaism and Christianity. This do unto others stuff is really difficult, and it seems to come up all the time. But I am motivated. I am personally motivated to go and relook at those others and see where I might be missing the mark. And I'm not sure I'll ever make the mark, but that's what successful aging to me actually should be about. And that is expanding your horizons for yourself, not diminishing your horizons for yourself, which is what the world tries to force you into because of our cultural images of aging. And many people say, oh, in the East, they respect elders more. Well, take a closer look. We seem to be all getting to be in the same boat. And that is making our life atrophied and smaller instead of bigger. So how can you make it bigger when you're not in the corporate ladder and you're not doing that anymore? By elevating your own self. And I did get the Four Wise Men. I thought it was terrific. I will admit I'm slowly reading it because I want it to be something that makes a difference. And when I hear you, Professor, you can make a difference, and you do, in that, and not just in the carpentry, but in the way you craft. Yeah, the way you craft people's minds. So I hope that there'll be yet another great course or another book that takes what you know in this academic and historical context to our own lives and what we can do with it, because it is a lot to extrapolate from your writing. So I thank you so much for being with us. It's just been such a pleasure. And I hope that, once again, you'll be on again for some of the more in-depth things that we can discuss. And for all those listening, you know what I'm going to say. Get out there, kids, and make it happen. Okay.
Wow, that went fast.
That went fast. But it all perfect timing. I had my time for the wrap-up and everything. But I'm very serious about that. I did forget. Not forgot. I put very back burner the other six. And I reused it. Yeah, I use meditation for personal relaxation. You're right.
Not and it's just okay for that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. But just, sure. You know, it's not all about melatonin. You know, sometimes if you do the right thing in the world, you feel better.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm so thrilled that you were on the show. I'm so glad that Stu had the guts to go in and invite you. What will happen now is it will be archived on our website. Of course, it will be live on Sunday on a lot of stations. BizTalk is the syndicator, and they also have a free app. If you go to BizTalk, there's the free app there from your app store or whatever that allows you to listen to any of their shows live. So mine is usually on 10 a.m. Eastern time on Sunday mornings. Some places it's on Saturday night, so you don't know, but you know you would know from BizTalk. And more importantly, it'll be on the front page of the website starting Wednesday coming. And that'll be
now, that's your
page.
Website, right? Not the
BizTalk
website.
That's my website. Right, that's mine. Good. And if you want to send a picture of the cover of the book, we can put the picture.
I'll do that right now then.
And that'd be very good. All right?
Okay. Great.
So that's wonderful. And you're in Waco. You're personally there?
No, I'm in Memphis right now. I was born in Waco, but I'm in Memphis.
In Memphis. Okay, wonderful. All right, take care, and thank you very much, and I hope that you'll come on again in a while after, you know, in the fall. If there's anything new that you want promoted, like a book or a course or something, let us know. We can have you on for that. Okay?
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. This has been a lot of fun.
It is fun. It's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.